Okay, hi. Hi, everybody. And we're kind of going from one program to the next here. That sometimes happens when we have the full moon time and we're doing the sacred pentagram work. I'll try to, in the future, famous last words, I'll try to keep it as reasonable as possible. Which may mean that we do reschedule or at least postpone some of the programs so that we can concentrate, on the full moon. It's an important one because it has us looking ahead, and this was the well, it depends on whether you do the 3-day version, the 5-day version, or the 7-day version. He's given indications that we can do either of them. And he's given words that have to do with the 7-day version, but he's also pretty much indicated the 5-day version is what we should be attending to. We're looking ahead, and we're looking to a time of a solar eclipse at about. Well, I should be able to see it in a minute here. First of all, what I'll do, I don't need that one. The eclipse is what I want to. It's on the 14th of the coming month, and it just so happens to be the day when all of the electors in the United States finally vote, and everything is solidified. As I've said, it gets wilder and wilder and crazier and crazier. This is what happens when you, at least in my opinion, I'll just give you my opinion. You have psychopathology and sociopathy in the highest levels of government. And basically, all it is, in another way of describing it, is extreme selfishness and egotism and somehow an inability to see beyond one's own very small personal welfare towards the good of the group and the good of the whole. That's what these fancy sounding psychological names really mean. Psychopathology and sociopathy. And there's an idea in there of morbidity and the fading away of the life force, in fact a death force taking over. Now there's no question in my mind that that is really what is happening, and that we are experiencing an inner attack by very sophisticated forces, which go along a line of great intelligence, but toward the preservation of that which was developed in the previous major solar system. So, whatever the program may be, if I'm doing it, I want to begin with our attention to the need to sustain our vigilance. And of course, every night, whether it's at 8 o'clock GMT on weekdays or 10 o'clock GMT on weekends, we do have this vigil for the USA. And of course, it's not just for the USA. if democracy fails in the USA, then it's going to be challenged worldwide. Now, my personal opinion is that it will not fail, and that too much is planned based upon the success of democracy in the United States and the supervening of a general form of government which reflects the hierarchical form of government. I hope and trust that that will be the case, but we must do our part, and it is largely an esoteric part, and we're not so many people, you know, compared to the great numbers, but we know a little bit about invocation, and we have great instruments that the Tibetan has given us, including this great invocation number 2, given out in 1940 during very dark days as far as the forces of light were concerned. They became even darker. But eventually, due to the Lords of Liberation, maybe especially due to their efforts and to the invocation of these great lords, whether purposeful, as in the case of disciples, or inchoate, in the case of the average suffering human being on the planet, they were reached. And humanity did not go down to destruction as even the hierarchy thought it might. So, in fact, we have a powerful instrument here. So let's, together with the idea that this attack will continue, not only up to the new inauguration, but beyond. And it's basically an attack on the psyche of the people, the psyche of humanity. It's trying to enlist more and more people as becoming members of the dweller force, the dweller on the threshold. Right now, it's at least in the United States, it's pretty evenly balanced, which itself is a terrible thing. It's a frightening thing. And you wonder, have we not made more progress? But that force cannot afford that force to get any stronger, and so thus we work. Let the Lords of Liberation issue forth. Let them bring succor to the sons of men. Let the rider from the secret place come forth, and coming save. Come forth, O Mighty One. Let the souls of men awaken to the light, and may they stand with massed intent. Let the fiat of the Lord go forth. The end of woe has come. Come forth, O Mighty One. The hour of service of the saving force has now arrived. Let it be spread abroad, O Mighty One. Let light and love and power and death fulfill the purpose of the coming one. The will to save is here. The love to carry forth the work is widely spread abroad. The active aid of all who know the truth is also here. Come forth, O Mighty One, and blend these three. Construct a great defending wall, the rule of evil now must end. And so, friends, we continue with as much persistence as we can muster. We continue to try to protect from the inner side of life. Just want to welcome you here, Anne and Anna and Anne Parker. There's a lot of Anne's or derivatives, Annette and Antoinette. Astra, Aria, Brennan, Catherine, Christine, and another Christine, Christine Moore, Christine Agard, Cindy, Georgina, Isabel, Ishtar, Jan, Johi, Karen, Carrie, Leslie, Martine, Miro, Natni, Nienka, Risto, Simon, Tia, Winnie, Yvonne, and Zenaide, and over here on the staff side, keeping us technically in line, BL, Joe, and Michael Stacy. So, welcome everybody. Now, we have gone this far. Science of Triangles, Program 89. And we're on page 496, and we've been examining some of the important triangles. There's so many. We'll see whether long ago I kind of looked at all the combinations and permutations of these triangles that took months, and I never did publish that, or my daughter really helped me transcribe it. So we'll see if I can dig it up. But as the Tibetan said, there are certain important triangles, and he's been giving them to us. Now we're reaching the end of that section on the triangles, in the, you know, semi-scientific sense. In other words, the kind of academic material behind our very important daily practice of the triangles, in a way that leads our planet towards sacredness. And when this is complete, there are a lot of references to triangles in the books. We'll be pulling them together and taking a look at them. And some of them are already assembled by one of our very diligent colleagues. So we'll examine the material that's outside of this particular book. And then I think, you know, we'll do something that helps us examine the crosses, the mutable, fixed, and cardinal crosses. There's some very valuable material there. Well, you know, it's partially a study now of esoteric astrology, partially that kind of study. But it has been triangularized, and we're always looking for triangles because it's the great stable figure. The soul itself is called a triangle. And the more we work on bisecting the square, as an ancient seer taught Master DK to do, I think it was Pythagoras, then the more we will be capable of bringing down these many, many triangles, as you may see. And many here are not even given, of course. But there are certain triangles that have to penetrate into the lower aspects of consciousness and elevate them. And we can see them represented here in terms of the causal body and its triangular configurations, in terms of the spiritual triad, in terms itself of the monad, and even in terms of up here the liberated monad. So there are many ways that we hope to set up conditions for higher triangles to penetrate our consciousness and thus elevate our consciousness. So a little more reading then. And I have a note here. Well, just a little segue. It's about identification. This identification with that, which is the subjective and real self, and the consequent withdrawing from that which is the not-self. Of course, everything ultimately is the self, you know, but still in the process, there is self and not-self. You know, when we're under the program, which demands division, then there is a self and a not-self, a real self and a not-self. So we are withdrawing from the not-self. It's all the keynote of the fourth initiation. And I've noticed, let's see, what page is it on? Is it on 473 or 273, something? I'm going to turn to esoteric astrology. 472, and there it is, the crises of the soul. And notice, he's been speaking of the fourth initiation, and notice the unexpected sign that you find associated with this fourth initiation. The crisis of renunciation. Crucifixion is its quality, and Gemini, which we've been studying along with Aquarius and Libra, is one of the main rulers of this fourth initiation. Of course, we realize we have Leo, the causal body, being destroyed, and Scorpio and Pisces, both of which are Plutonic in their nature, and helping to to destroy that causal body, but Gemini denotes the crisis of renunciation. Right here on page 472, you know, the study of the seven crises, I think, are very important, and they kind of tell us where we are at the moment. And I think, you know, so many of us are involved with the crisis of the battlefield. You know, maybe we're beyond the crisis of the birthplace, which is given to Virgo, but it's also interestingly given to Gemini and to Leo. And if you listen to my book on the Egoic Lotus, you'll see how I discuss every initiation in terms of multiple signs and in relation to the petals of the Egoic Lotus which are involved. These signs of the zodiac have multiple impacts. And for instance, Leo can be involved very much at the first initiation, but also at the second, also at the third, also at the fourth. And since it is the fifth sign of the zodiac, obviously, it has to do with this blazing apex of being human with the fifth initiation. So every sign has different capabilities that can be applied to various of the initiations and not just one initiation. But anyway, you know, Gemini is one of those signs definitely connected with the fourth initiation. And maybe at the fourth degree, we learn what is real and what is not. In the book that Master DK recommends, we all have, which is the Viveka Kudamani, or the Crest Jewel of Discrimination, we are really discriminating between the dense cosmic subplanes, which are mental, emotional, physical, and the cosmic etheric. We are learning to get into that part of our planetary logos, into that part of our solar logos, which is alive with the principles of this solar system. And it is a great discrimination that we pass through. That's what Viveka means. It means discrimination. And maybe that really comes in most forcefully at the fourth degree, the crucifixion, the renunciation, whatever we want to call it, depending on whether we're in the east or the west. The monad, our spirit, comes very strongly forward, and we begin to really realize its vibration. Now, already we're getting a hint of that when we are at the third initiation. But the causal body still exists, and that means that there is still a veil upon the more direct energy of the monad. But at the fourth degree, we withdraw from identification with the not real self, the not self, with which we are usually so identified. And we get more and more into the understanding what, who and what we are as a real self. And that starts with the identification as the spiritual triad and not just the soul. and then eventually the monad and so forth. Now, to most of us, those are just words, you know, and we get used to knowing where the words belong. But from another perspective, they can be experiences. And as we learn to meditate and withdraw from the personality vehicles, all this inner life starts to get a lot more real, which is what we are striving for. And then our service becomes more powerful, and it's much needed now. I mean, we cannot think that just because the election appears to be over, at least in the eyes of those who have followed elections in the past, we cannot think that it is over. And the forces of selfishness are fighting tremendously through their representatives. So that's the idea behind that this whole process is related to Gemini, where the pairs of opposites are separating the self from the not self. Now, probably all of us should have a little idea, even if it's not perfect yet, about the difference between identifying as the not self and identifying as the inner being. I hope we are developing that. Okay, so now, you know, going on a little, from the mass awareness in Cancer, you know, Aries, Taurus, Gemini, Cancer, the fourth, and having to do with the densest of the planes, the physical part of the etheric physical plane. So from the mass awareness in Cancer, the man becomes an individual in Leo. I mean, out of the mass, this point appears. And this point, in a way, is you, in a way. And it is temporarily distinct from all other points. You are the individual, and you have your own way in everything. Now, later, of course, also under Leo, that point is relinquished. And then we're coming more into that stage of identifying with everybody else as if they were ourselves, as if they were the one self. The man becomes an individual in Leo, from Cancer to Leo, from the moon to the sun, symbolically. And the slow, unintelligent subconsciousness of the herd, that's a good way, I think, of describing mass consciousness, because we have, you know, the sheep. The sheep are in the fold in Cancer. We have two constellations, the lesser sheepfold and the greater sheepfold. And in a lot of ways, mass conscious people are like the sheep, and they kind of follow one another, jumping over the fence. It's a real thing they do. From the slow, unintelligent subconsciousness of the herd, that becomes the self-awareness of the developed man in Leo. Now, we have, you know, studying spiritual things, we have passed that stage. We have become the individual. And then along the way, sometimes we become the egocentrist. And then only then afterwards, after the fall from the tower, do we become the aspirant, someone who's really striving for the higher state of consciousness and eventually the initiate of the first degree, in whom the Christ consciousness is being born in the heart. So you get that sense of the movement from Cancer to Leo. In Cancer, we're not very self-aware. We just go along with everybody else. That's the mass consciousness. And in Leo, we become increasingly self-aware and distinct, apparently, for a while, from everybody else. So, instinctual reaction, which is Cancerian, and that's why I should have had that over here, because it's truer there, gives place to conscious intellectual activity. The number five is very strong. The concrete mind, the number five, Leo, the fifth sign, the fifth ray coming through Leo, the pursuit of knowledge, justifying knowledge, proving it. All of this starts to happen as instinct gives way to intellectual activity. Now, we go further to make a triangle out of it. This dual activity, in turn, gives place to the group awareness. Let's see if I can, for some reason that doesn't want to go. Yeah, gives way to group awareness, which is the gift conferred by Aquarius, by Aquarian activity. And then our abilities, our resources are made available to every member of the group, and we all enrich each other. One for all and all for one, that's one of the great Aquarian mottos. We really learn something about group consciousness in Aquarius wherever we're applying that Aquarius. There's all kinds of groups that we may join, and if the group has a purpose, if it's progressive, if it leads to greater elevation, then it's operating the way Aquarius should operate. So from Cancer to Leo to Aquarius, a very important triangle. And, you know, it's the beginning of understanding something about the second initiation. I say the beginning. I mean, you know, obviously the sign Aquarius is powerful at the third, the fourth, the fifth initiations. But it really begins to take on its initial work when we understand the meaning of fellowship and sisterhood and, you know, the idea that people get together as brothers and sisters and enrich each other with their stories, with their experiences, with their observations, and everybody benefits from everybody else. And there is a faster growing together. Now, also, let's not think that Leo does not have the ability to serve powerfully, it does. DK tells us that heights of noted service are to be found in both Leo and Aquarius. It's just a different path. And I would say, though, that since opposite signs are very closely related to each other, that the Leo individual begins to develop the Aquarian abilities and Aquarius the Leonian abilities. So you're going to find leadership and group consciousness in both of those signs as elevation is pursued. So the dual activity of Cancer Leo in turn gives place to the group awareness, which is the gift conferred. Notice the gift conferred. Dane Rudyar, he often changed the names of his books, but there was a collection of essays called The Gifts of the Spirit. And it was that the idea that each one of the signs of the zodiac had something to give. And essentially, as a great lord, the lord of the constellation this or that, wanted to give this spiritual gift in the right way to whomever could benefit from it. So every time we move into a new sign of the zodiac, like here we are just moving into Sagittarius, the lord of that constellation is giving. And in this case, hopefully, it is the gift of vision leading to revelation. I think there's so much deflation of the spiritual psyche these days because so many really difficult, anti-progressive events have occurred that people might get a little depressed with it all. But Sagittarius does confer this optimism. And it is related to the idea that where there is no vision, the people perish, but it's also related to the idea that where there is vision, the people come alive. And maybe some of us have begun to feel that, you know, under the Sagittarian energy, a new form of energy that in the sequence, the meditative sequence from Leo to Capricorn, we call inspiration. Inspiration from Aquarius. Anyway, so then he goes on to say about Aquarius, the superconscious divine man then transcends his limited self-consciousness and the intuition supersedes the intellect. Now, in this case, Aquarius is being called superconsciousness, and it's sometimes associated with universal mind. As we find universal mind, particularly beginning in the cosmic ethers of our cosmic physical plane, universal mind. So that is an important triangle. If you have that in your chart, you can try to track the progress of emergence from early instinctual tendencies, which we all recapitulate through that more egocentric or personal-centric state, and eventually into a broader consciousness of Aquarius. And even if your moon is there, you know, you end up substituting something higher, such as Uranus, mental, and Neptune, emotional, and Vulcan, physical. I mean, those are the real forces behind the moon. So, you know, the idea is we have to learn the technique of analyzing the progress that can be undertaken in a particular series of signs we call a triangle. There's a lot of things you can do with a triangle. It's not a rigid figure. It rotates. Different signs come to the apex depending upon the stage of evolution. And then there are the rulers of the zodiacal signs, which, for instance, if we have, well, there's different ways to do this, but if we have a triangle here of Cancer, Leo, and Aquarius, then the rulership of the moon, the sun veiling Neptune, and Jupiter as the esoteric ruler of Aquarius becomes important. In other words, there are a number of ways to triangulate the planets that are related in different ways to signs of the zodiac, which are in a triangle. And so rather than just have a one-off rigid figure, you have a lot of mutation going on within any such triangle. And it will all depend on the stage of evolution. Now, for instance, I can do it the other way too. I don't have to begin with the signs of the zodiac. What if I begin with three planets, let us say? And I'll just choose some planets. Let's say I choose Mars, Jupiter, and Uranus. I can pull in from Mars the sign Scorpio. I can pull in from Jupiter the sign Aquarius. I can pull in from Uranus the sign Libra. And so I would have a triangle of Scorpio, Aquarius, and Libra, and I don't even have to keep them in that order. Basically, you see what I've done. I have pulled in different signs of the zodiac based on their esoteric rulers. Now, if I considered Mars, Jupiter, and Uranus to be exoteric rulers, different signs of the zodiac would be pulled in, and I would look for the relation between them. So all of this is gaining some skill and facility at understanding the science of relations. And what are we relating? Centers of energy. We are relating chakras. We are relating planets to planets to signs to signs. And sometimes we are relating signs to the great constellations, such as Great Bear, Little Bear, Pleiades. There are those kinds of triangles too. So there are horizontal triangles, and there are vertical triangles which relate energy centers of different kinds. Just remain alert to them and learn how to think in those terms and learn how to identify some of the important triangles in your own chart. Now, you will always have a sun, moon, and rising sign. And you will always have, later, at a certain point of elevation in your progress, you will have a sun sign, a rising sign, and a point opposite the sun sign. I'm not saying that we can use that triangle for everybody all the time, but you will have it. And there will be others that appear. And you have to ask yourself, how is this triangle working in my life, if it is working in my life? And then trace it to the kinds of events through which you are passing and the kind of psycho-spiritual development which you should be undertaking. Now, DK, I'll just a tiny bit more here. At this stage in the unfoldment of the human consciousness, there is little, he says, that I can say further. I meant the signs of triangles. He kind of hints that if we were more fully developed, he could say a lot more in terms of the subtlety of the triangles and what kind of development they could lead to in our own life. So I just pause here for a second to say that if you can find out within your deep self-search what is your next step ahead, there will be some kind of triangular configuration, even if it's simply your rising sign, sun sign, and moon sign, that will help you understand more fully that next step. So this is the key, really, in all of it. Go into meditation and think about your next step ahead. Do that independently of thinking of any triangles. Just think deeply, what is my next step? And then you'll be able to find something in your astrological chart, even if it's simply the rising sign in relation to the sun sign, or the rising sign ruler in relation to the sun sign ruler, etc., that will give you a hint as to how to pursue that next step ahead. That's the most important thing. You know, the old saying, the journey of 10,000 miles begins with but a single step. And we're always taking that next step if we can identify it. And we have certain indicators, such as these triangles, which, whether they are chakric or planetary or zodiacal, help us understand better how to take that next step. So he says here, I have hinted at the entire structure of living moving, focusing, and transmitting light triangles, which should underlie, and eventually will underlie, the manifested universe. And maybe by that he means especially on the cosmic physical plane, but you know, there are other levels of the universe, and does he include them when he says manifested universe? Anyway, we know that the cosmic ethers and the cosmic dents are involved in these living, moving, focusing, transmitting triangles. So we have this web of light, and we archetypalize it by transforming it into a web of triangles. Now, sometimes it's going to be a web of circles, interlocking circles, the way our sun is etherically constituted. He doesn't say too much about that. From squares to triangles to circles. And right now, we're working pretty much on the idea of from squares to triangles, whether it's in our own little energy system or whether it's in the larger planetary or solar system or beyond. And then, you know, later we'll get into the circles. So basically, we've just looked at one triangle today, from Cancer to Leo to Aquarius. You'll note that I have often mentioned that particular triangle without necessarily getting to this section of the book. There's more here, and we will continue, because we want to understand something in depth and not simply run over it and use a lot of words that don't really mean anything to us except words. So the next one will be Science of Triangles number 90. And it will be on the 9th of December. And it will be a morning presentation, morning discussion, etc. Let's see if I... Yeah, okay. I think, you know, what's really important is getting the technique down, learning how to identify major triangles and why they are major, and why they may be major in your life at this time, or why they are major for humanity at this time. Triangles fade in and out in their importance. And given a certain stage of development of humanity, the triangle we're talking about is important. From instinct to intellect to intuition. Alice Bailey wrote the book, right? It's a wonderful little book. And she really is clear, you know, with her first ray mind, she's really clear. So, you know, we read that book and we understand why it's important to move into group consciousness. Now, what if we were more advanced yet? I would offer this triangle instead. I would offer the triangle that goes Leo, Aquarius, Pisces. Why might I do that? Leo would represent that we are starting beyond the instinctual stage. We're all self-possessed, integrating human beings who have achieved something in the nature of our personal abilities that are distinctive. And we've learned to move into group consciousness and to share those abilities. But what lies beyond that? Beyond the group lies the one. And it is Pisces being a cosmic decanate and a sign of the most profound identification leads us to a deep experience of the one and only, such as the Christ has, he being the great representative of the Piscean cosmic decanate. There are three of them, you know. Hercules is Scorpio. The Christ is Pisces. And the Buddha is Taurus. Now, of course, oneness is something at a certain stage that everyone will experience, but no matter what sign it may be. But there are certain signs that are particularly opening the door to non-discrimination, if I may say. Maybe Cancer is another one. The whole is seen as one. So rather than Cancer being the beginning of a instinctual mass consciousness phase, we could have altogether a different kind of approach, whereas we could move from the group consciousness of Aquarius, well, we could move from the intellect and individuality of Leo to the group consciousness of Aquarius, and we could go all the way down to Cancer again from the other direction. And it would mean that oneness is appreciated and understood. The whole is seen as one. But Pisces is the great sign of pralaya. And what happens in pralaya? Distinction, artificial mental distinction between things disappears. And this is one of the reasons that we say Mercury, the great discriminator, falls in the sign Pisces. So we get a completely different reading on Pisces at the stage of evolution we're talking about, and Aquarius segues into Pisces. Now, we have been told that most people take the fifth initiation as world servers, and Aquarius is very important in taking that fifth initiation as a great world server. But a few come in relation to Shambhala and to utter sacrifice, and they become world saviors because they are so identified with everybody and everything. And so in that respect, Pisces lies just a little beyond the Aquarius, and in the triangle I proposed, first one, Leo, Aquarius, Pisces, it means something quite different from the early type of Piscean experience. So always try to look at the level of evolution that you're talking about when you want to see what a sign or a triangle of signs is offering. You know, if someone comes to me and says, well, tell me what a Pisces like, is like, tell me what an Aquarian is like, I can't do that anymore. I'll have to say, or if they say, tell me what Leo, Aquarius, Pisces as a triangle is like, I can't do it unless I know the stage of evolution of the entity, whether human or solar systemic or cosmic or beyond. I have to know what type of entity we're talking about and what stage of evolution, given the range of possible evolution for that entity, the range, the point at which that entity stands within its own range of evolution, then it becomes possible to say, what does this sign do? What does this triangle do? So you just cannot read all energy points in the same way unless you know the caliber of the entity you are dealing with. Okay. That gives us a little more on the subject. And if Michael would be so kind, we can only go on so far here because we do have the 8 o'clock vigil. And you know why we have it. So, do we have any thoughts or questions that people would like to put forward?
Michael, a couple of housekeeping things before we get to the questions. End of Science of Triangles, you transpose the 9 and 8.
Let's see, End of Science of Triangles. Ah, right. We'll get there, huh? What is it, 89? Yeah.
Yes. And then evening at 6 p.m. GMT for the same one.
Okay. All righty. Thank you. Yep.
And the next one, next line, number 90, will be at 6 a.m.
Right. Exactly.
And then down below, morning at 6 a.m.
Yep. Okay, thanks, Michael.
And we do have a question early on from Yvonne.
Okay.
Who are the Lords of Liberation?
Well, you know, the question is not completely answered. They are residents of Shambhala. They are solar systemic beings. And the question is, like the spirit of peace and the avatar of synthesis, are they extraplanetary, meaning they associate themselves with our planet at the right time, but they really have an extraplanetary solar systemic origin, you know, like Spirit of Peace, Avatar of Synthesis, or are they intraplanetary? I think all I can say is that at the moment, they function as great shambolically involved beings. And I don't think he tends to tell us whether they come from extraplanetary sources or not. So that would be the question to answer. Are they always shambolic beings, or are they solar systemic beings that have come to associate themselves within Shambhala? And I'm not sure of the answer of that yet. but maybe someone knows or has a reference on that. But I don't at the moment. But I think that's the question. Right now, they work out of Shambhala in association with the three air signs, which is interesting. Liberty, Aquarius. Equality, Libra. And Fraternity, Gemini. Those are the three names that have been given. Now, it's kind of interesting because it was France that promoted in its revolution those three names. Later, DK said, well, they didn't live up to it and it was withdrawn. It's very hard to live up to that because, you know, the monarchy came back and the emperors and all of that under the influence of Napoleon. Napoleon had a very powerful Leo, not Aquarius, and he was centralizing within himself an empire, basically. That's what he wanted to do. He was stopped, but the impulse continued, and the kingship continued. And notice that France does have a Leo personality, which aligns it with the idea of monarchy. But nevertheless, in that great revolution, which was all about freeing humanity and I suppose lifting it into the cosmic ethers, really, into the triad. See, the spiritual triad itself has something to do with the laws of liberation. When you look at Atma Buddhi Manas, and you think about liberty, equality, fraternity, and you think about Aquarius, Libra, and Gemini, we can correlate those things. So there is something about these great beings working to make the spiritual triad more effective in the life of humanity, the air signs, more effective as representing the cosmic ethers. But as to whether they have always been in Shambhala or whether they are temporary associates, I can't really answer that, but I keep on looking for the answer. I think it gives a little bit of idea that they do work with Sanat Kumara and the seven spirits before the throne, etc., at this time. I have little hints come to me about the power of Venus, you know. But in terms of their, and maybe they are representatives of different planets that have come to work within Shambhala. For instance, the First Lord of Liberation would work in relation to Uranus, Liberty. The Second Lord of Liberation, or, you know, you can do either way, but the one who represents equality can work in relation to Libra, and hence to Venus. And then the third in relation, fraternity, in relation to Mercury and Gemini. So there are links to other parts of our solar system, but so much is mysterious about these beings that I don't think he's given that out. But if he has, I'd be happy to know it.
There are no more questions yet written in the chat box, and I am not seeing any hands raised at this time.
I wonder how many of us can visualize our own astrological chart. You know, if you've been an astrologer and you've stared at it long enough, some kind of image will come up in your imagination. And although a chart can be a complex thing with many parts, at least the major planets, we should know, using whatever house system we use. I guess most people are using Placidus, which is no guarantee of anything, but at least that's the most common one. The positions of the planets should be capable of being visualized. Maybe not all at once, but point by point by point. Can you think for a minute, if you can do that? I'm not going to go into an analysis of all of what you might come up with right now, but can you locate a triangle in your chart, if you hold a visual image, or maybe some of you just have your chart in front of you? Can you locate a triangle that you think is important? It could be a triangle of signs in which important planets are found, or it could be a triangle simply of planets, considering them as planets and not so much in relation to the signs in which they find themselves. Maybe can you find a triangle that you think is working in your chart in some significant way? Now, this is a big question, and I'm just kind of off the top of my head here suggesting that we look at it, but it would take some pretty close study. And you know, sometimes it doesn't have to be, like I say, three separate signs. Two of the planets can be in the same sign. It's just that you would interpret them at different levels of their expression. Well, okay, you know, just a little attempt. Actually, it's a fairly complicated question, and one would have to sit down with one's chart. The reason I suggested imagination is I don't know how many people have their chart immediately available. but maybe in their imagination they do. And there will always be the sun, moon, and rising sign. And there will always be the sun sign, rising sign, and point opposite. But what about other triangles? Now, sometimes planets in aspect, pretty close aspect, can be considered as more related than if they were not in aspect. But there's also planets in different signs that you can relate, whether or not they are in tight aspect, whether or not they are. See, in my own chart, if I could say, I do have that Cancer, Leo, and Aquarius, just like we were talking about today. But those are signs which have important planets in them. But how I would treat that would depend on where I think I stand in the process of moving from, let's say, individual consciousness to group consciousness. So it's a little more complex than just saying, well, there it is. And sometimes you will be born during a period back in the, you know, back in the 40s, there was a time when the air signs had a lot of planets in them. Libra had Neptune. And Saturn had, Gemini had Saturn. Gemini also had Uranus. Now, there's just two signs, but three planets in air signs, and they're all big and important. Saturn, Uranus, Neptune. What would that triangle mean? Now, many millions of people would have it, but they wouldn't necessarily be responding to it. That's the thing. But would you be responding to something that many people had for a long time if they were born in that period? Did it mean something individual to you? That's the question. Well, you know, easily this class could turn into, if it's a class, this kind of program could turn into astrological readings, which for many reasons is probably not a great idea, although some things could be indicated. That would be a whole different approach. But maybe Michael, yes, Michael?
We have a question and some information.
Okay.
Christine asks, what to think of a sun sign in Scorpio, but as in Vedic astrology, it becomes in Aquarius?
It depends on what system you're using, really. The Vedic system stops at Saturn, and it has a lot to do with the personality sign of India, which is Capricorn and very traditional. And it doesn't really use many, many factors that are found in the solar system, including all these trans-Saturnian planets and all kinds of bodies which are even trans-Pluto, beyond Pluto. So in a traditional way, it has stopped its development. However, within the boundaries of Saturn, it can be very concretely accurate. I'm quite sure, however, that the kind of astrology we are using now from the Tibetan includes these larger possibilities and definitely is trans-Saturnian. So I know there are brilliant Vedic astrologers and they can be very accurate in much of what they discuss, but they have drawn a Saturnian limit upon the spiritual psychology of the rays which DK uses. And therefore, I leave that to them and what they can do with it. And I stay with the tropical astrology, which DK has indicated is truly esoteric. It's either on page 63 or 61 of Astrology, where he says, well, you know, the best thing would be for me to show it to you. All I have to do is find it, right? And the way to do that is to look here and fact, esoteric, truth. Maybe that will bring me there. And there it is. Of course, it's deep blue, so I'll just, you know, I really shouldn't have left it blue. I prefer the color for what it said, but I find that it's not visible. The month and the sign, or the place of the sun in the heavens, do not really coincide. Now here comes the important part. When we state, for instance, that the sun is in Aries, it conveys an esoteric truth, but not an exoteric fact. Now, just in that sentence alone, he gives an esoteric valuation to tropical astrology. And when he tells us when the Waysak festival is and when we should celebrate it, it is in tropical Taurus and not in sidereal Taurus. And then he goes on to say the sun was in Aries at the beginning of this great cycle, but it is not in exactly the same position today when it is found in that sign. In other words, due to the precession of the equinoxes, there has been a constant kind of regression of the vernal equinox, which points to starry systems in which the sun would be exoterically located. So I use this system. I use the tropical system as esoteric, as the Tibetan uses it, pretty much that way anyway. And in that system, he talks of 115 planets and planetoids, of emergent and disappearing planets, dying planets, planets being born, all the asteroids being of significance, a solar system which is huge and in which many new points of power are being discovered. All of that is beyond what Vedic astrology does. And as I say, while I respect the what can be achieved in Vedic astrology within certain limits, I prefer the more expansive esoteric astrology which the Tibetan has given. I think that's all I can say about it at the moment.
And Isabel has shared the information on the Lords of Liberation that is found in Externalization of the Hierarchy on page 266, which begins, who are the Lords of Liberation and from whence do they come? I have put that reference and page number into the chat box for everyone.
And what does it say about from whence do they come?
All the ideas and concepts which control human life and have given rise to our civilization have started as emanations from certain great lives, who are themselves an expression of a divine idea. The note they strike and the quality they emanate reaches out and makes an impact upon the most developed of the sons of men found at any particular time upon the earth. These then proceed to make the sensed idea their own and to familiarize the thinkers of their time with the formulated concept. In this way, great motivating divine purposes become controlling factors in human progress. It is in this way that the basic urge to liberation and to freedom has slowly and consistently dominated human endeavor, leading first of all to the struggle for individual freedom and liberation with the incidental idea of heaven, of initiation, and the spiritual attainment, and gradually molding human thought to such an extent that the greater ideal takes shape. The freedom of humanity and the liberation of its power to be self-determining, which is an aspect of freedom, has become the dearest ideal and the best thought of the thinkers in all nations. In the last analysis, it is this interference with individual and group freedom, which is the worst sin of the evil men who seek at this time to enslave the weaker nations and bend them to the rule of Germany, depriving them of their national assets and means of subsistence, and wresting from them by force and fear their dearest possessions, liberty of life and conscience.
Yes, okay, so that's a very valuable reference. What it essentially does is tells us how shambolic lives operate. And anything said there could probably be said in a still more intense form of planetary logoi, of Sanat Kumara, etc. So the way they function from Shambhala, what they inspire, who they inspire, and how great ideas which they adhere to or which they are become part of human thinking, all of that is given in the reference that you just read. The origin of the Lords of Liberation still remains a question, but their link to certain great constellations and to certain planets probably cannot be denied. Whether they are, you know, extensions of those more original sources, I think is likely. But whether they came from those original sources or were part of Shambhala, just the way the seven spirits before the throne are extensions of the solar systemic seven spirits before the throne, which are extensions of a still greater seven before the throne of the cosmic logos, etc. So it tells us how they operate, it tells us what they do, and how humanity benefits, but their origin is still not given in a direct way. Anyway, maybe people can intuit it, perhaps. Anyway, thank you both for finding that reference and reading it too. Thank you.
And I think perhaps the last sharing, so that preparations can be made for the coming vigil. Jan shares what she calls a pretty tidy little triangle of Mercury 14 degrees Cancer, Moon 15 degrees Virgo, and Saturn 14 degrees Scorpio.
Yes, what Cancer, Virgo, and Scorpio, and he actually does talk about certain signs, each of which is in that grouping you gave, in the life of the disciple. Maybe you can find that in the book, but there are, from Cancer to Virgo to Scorpio, and maybe including Capricorn, I'm not sure, are indicators of different phases in the life of discipleship. So you have Mercury to the, what did you say, Mercury to the Moon to, or what was it?
Yeah, Mercury, Moon, Saturn.
Okay.
Mercury in Cancer, Moon, Virgo, Saturn, Scorpio.
Yeah, and I think what you would want to do there is you would want to treat the Moon in its esoteric meaning, as the esoteric, the veiling esoteric ruler of Virgo. And you would want to look at Neptune and Vulcan and see what seemed appropriate in your own case, because it's not always the same for everybody. In Virgo, there is the really strong concentration on the physical plane under Vulcan, and on the kind of devotion of the astral plane under Neptune. And it all ends with the law and with a karmic confrontation and an overcoming of negativity in the Saturn-Scorpio position. It's a rough position to handle, but it begins with thought. It begins with Mercury in Cancer, which is often traditional thought. And maybe it begins even with a blend of Kama and Manas, because Mercury, the monastic planet in a very Kamic sign, which is Cancer. And then it moves into an emphasis either on Neptune or on Vulcan. So from the realm of thought, it moves into a more practical handling of those two planes, and then finally with a test or tests, everything you've built up, or, you know, this is one way to interpret it. Anyway, everything built up as we move from thought to purification is tested when we have Saturn in Scorpio. Now, that's just a little bit of, you know, superficial stuff, but eventually a confrontation occurs, and that's a big step in dealing with the Hydra, which one has to understand first and begin to a process of purification before one can really overcome it with the law. Okay, well, that thank you. And that has to be now the end of what we're doing, because we do have the vigil coming up. And the vigil will be on Zoom. And let's see, Michael, do you have that in there? Everybody should know it by now. It's always the same. It's always the same link.
I have not yet put it in, but I can.
Yeah. Well, just in case we have anybody new visiting us in this particular program. So let's just do the great invocation together, and that will give Michael time also to put in the Zoom link. Okay. From the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into the minds of men. Let light descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into the hearts of men. May Christ return to earth. From the center where the will of God is known, let purpose guide the little wills of men. The purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center which we call the race of men, let the plan of love and light work out, and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth. Thanks, everybody. Many blessings, and maybe we'll see some of you at the vigil in just 20 minutes or so. So this will be up on Makara fairly soon, and one can study what is there. The important thing I wanted to add, when you find a triangle like that, like the Mercury, Moon, veiling certain planets, and Saturn, interpret it yourself first. See what I mean? In other words, weigh your own interpretation equally with mine. What does it mean to you? It can mean many things, but assuming that we're dealing with the disciple, it's always progressive, and in this case, purifying and demanding. Okay. We'll go on to the next program, and thank you, Michael, and everybody for BL and Joe. Thank you for being here, and yeah, we had our whole team here. Okay, thank you. We'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.